step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You are now listening to Vigilantes Radio. The people's choice for quality art, interviews, special guests, music, and hot topics. Hosted by Demetrius D. Black Reynolds and co-hosted by the Vigilantes. Pogosi, Subba Bra, Banditti, and Controvert. Call in to join the mix at 602-753-1654 or hop in via Skype by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/onlyonemediagroup. All episodes of this podcast are available for free download at www.onlyonemediagroup.com. Immediately after each broadcast, we welcome all. To submit materials, topics, and ideas, email us at theradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. Enjoy the show.
Wowzers, we are up 14,000 listeners, 865,000 downloads worldwide this year alone, and it is all because of you guys. We currently have, 825 people on the browser right now. Thank you guys for tuning in. But we are the people who have dedicated their lives to music, art, and research in every aspect, and we want to allow you the opportunity to tell your story. Man, we've had celebrities on our show, from Grammy Award-winning artists to actors, authors, professors. It doesn't matter who you are or what walk of life that you come from. Come on our show and talk to us to book an interview or just to share a story. Email me at theradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. I am passionate about what I do, just as passionate about what you do. And together, we can get your voice heard by the people that should hear it. So let's create something incredible. Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast tonight on Vigilantes Radio. Thank you, as always, for tuning in, you guys, and being a part of my audience family. If you like information on how to call in, ask questions, or speak to our guests, you can always dial 602-753-1654 or hop in the mix directly from my website, which is over at onlyonemediagroup.com, and just click the tab that says Vigilantes Radio, and there's a little button that says call in. Just tap that and Google will connect you directly by your browser. Make sure you have like headphones and a mic if you want to talk, but if not, you can listen throughout through your speakers. All episodes are available for free download as the show ends on my website, which is, again, onlyonemediagroup.com, and that goes for past shows as well. Tonight's episode is the 627 interview. That's right, from Seattle, 627. And with that said, I'm your host, Dini Mussolini, from the multiverse where Flash and Green Arrow are from. Anyway. Yeah, I'm a comic junkie. All right. So let's go through the announcements real quick. I just left Louisiana Friday, October the 5th. I'll be back on the road in Decatur, Georgia. A show there at 8 o'clock at Lavish Bistro. And then later on that night, 12 a.m. exactly, I'll be playing at the A3C Festival with like Mystical, Rick Ross, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Redman, Legendary Kid Capri, Master P, Cameron, a lot of those older guys that have been in the music business for a while. So yeah, I'll be there. And that's a 4-day festival. On the 9th, I'll be performing again in Decatur before I leave out. And I think we're going to add one more show on the 7th. I'm not sure about that yet, but we're trying to squeeze that in. Then October the 14th, I'll be headed up to the Midwest, Bloomington, Indiana, performing with Hugh Lee at the University of Indiana Homecoming. So that's pretty major for me. I never did a homecoming, so pretty cool. And then I'm back down south to Memphis, Tennessee on October 23rd and November the 19th in Hollywood, California, doing a release party for a friend of mine. And that's about it. And as you guys know, I've also started a new venture called Chat with Meech. And basically what it is I'm an artist coach, you know, basically here to guide you in your career. If you're just starting out, you know, I have some tips and pointers, some backdoor industry tips, how to get in, how to stay relevant, stuff like that. But it's for all genres, trust me. And then also have a course for like seasoned veterans. Like I've managed Grammy Award winning artists, book tours. Like the biggest tour I ever worked on was Nicki Minaj. That was pretty major. But yeah, a little background. I started out with Russell Simmons as an intern in New York. And then 1 year later, I began to took on the task of his road manager. And we did the Fat Form tour. And then I got tired of working for him and opened up my own management branch. Fast forward, became a musician, toured, you know, been signed, been dumped by a label, blah, jay. So I have a lot of things that I could share, especially with up and coming artists from all genres. I've managed rock groups, R&B, pop, international superstars, you name it. Anyway, that is a new venture we just started. You can go over to onlyonemediagroup.com and schedule a free review of your mindset, your music, and just you overall as a person or your band or your group, because everything starts in the mindset first. So if your mind is in the wrong place, it's pretty obvious that your career is probably in the wrong place as well. But yeah, just run on over to the website. You can schedule that appointment with me there. You can shoot me a text from the website as well. I'm very hands-on. We will be taking questions from Facebook tonight. That was a cool thing we started last week, and we'll do it again this week. We actually have a chat room for the podcast, but there's rarely anybody in there. And when they do, I never, you know, open the browser to look. So tonight, if you're on the browser, just hop on over to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Vigilantes Radio, and communicate with me there. All right. As always, we like to start out, start the show with the little Coach Deanie tip. So my tip for tonight is getting feedback on your music from your target audience or even a music professional is a great way to measure the progress you're making. Everyone loves that, you know, additional boost of confidence, especially when it applies to something you've created yourself. But what happens when you get the feedback that's the opposite of what you wanted to hear? So here's one tip that will help minimize the sting and turn it all around into something productive. So here it is. Don't get discouraged. Get motivated. And what I mean, remember that finding your true creative voice and sound, not to mention an audience, requires a significant amount of time, patience, dedication, motivation, and workflow. And workflow is the important part. It also requires that you do a great deal of experimenting, practicing, training, creative thinking. So the bottom line is it requires that you roll up your sleeve and work hard until you find the path that's right for you. Now, this isn't meant to intimidate you, rather to stimulate you. And as AC/DC said in their famous song, it's a long way to the top. If you want to rock and roll, you better believe it, baby. All right. Music has always been a matter of energy to me, a question of fuel. Sentimental people call it inspiration. But what really mean What I really mean is few is always needed. I'm a serious consumer. On some nights, I still believe that a car with gas on the needle, right past empty, can still run about 50 more miles if you have the right music playing very loud on the radio. Do you agree? We'll see. Here's 627 Joshua Song. Take a sec or two at the beginning, not only to welcome 627 here, but let them introduce themselves as well. What is up, 627? You're live.
Yeah, wow. Thank you for having us. What an honor.
Definitely. How's it going?
I'm doing well. You're sitting here with Greg. I don't have anyone else with the band with me here tonight, but yeah, I really appreciate you having us on. What a really cool experience.
All right, cool deal, Greg. All right, well, let's go jump right into it. Welcome to my podcast, and thank you so much for your time. I've always enjoyed talking to people and bands or projects that are just getting going and starting to really define their sound, image, and start their first recording sessions, just like you guys were doing at the start of this year. So that works out perfect for this interview. From what I've read so far, seems like you're already at an exciting time to be a part of 627. And also from what I read, it seems like this collaboration of a band comes together from blood relation and friendship. So tell us about that in the very core beginnings and origin behind the band, and let us in on how this whole project is going.
All right. Well, ironically, the project started out as a demo, a 7-song demo that I recorded all by myself. I played the drums, the bass, all the guitars, all the vocal tracks, and I recorded this stuff. I've been a drummer my whole life, so I kind of recorded this stuff in my spare time while raising a family. It was kind of my first experiment with writing songs on the guitar and trying to record them and play them for other people to see if they were like actual viable ideas. And so I recorded some and put them on the internet, and I got like 1,000 streams in the first day between all of the songs combined. And I was standing with a friend when it happened, and I thought, you know, I wonder what would happen if we kind of poked at this thing and like actually tried to do something with it. So he asked basically a cousin of his if he would like to come over and play some drums. And so, yeah, we did our first practice with just the three of us, I think sometime in March, after having just put the stuff on the internet, I think in January. So it was a pretty quick evolution.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then, of
I'll
course,
say.
When you bring in the idea of blood relation, as we started to approach time to go into the studio and record, I actually was a little bit scared, to be honest, being a drummer. Like I started to have a little bit of doubt creep in my ability to play the guitar, and I went to my security blanket. I've always played music with my older brother, Jason, and he lives in Austin, Texas. He's been playing in a band down there called Drive On Mac. And I just called him up and said, hey, if I flew you up here, do you think you could go in the studio with me and just play rhythm guitar and at least be there to kind of, you know, just in case I'm not good enough to do this. I don't know. And he agreed and came up and practiced with us a few times, and we went in the studio. And then a similar thing happened. I wanted to do some harmonies on the record, and I have a younger brother, Matt, who is an amazing trained jazz vocalist. And so I had him come down and sing in the studio with us, and it just kind of stuck. We decided we wanted to keep that lineup for when we went live and went to tour. So yeah, it is both friends and family.
Man, that is great. On a personal level though, how important was it for you just to make the EP Some Other's Day?
It was really important. I think as an artist, like, I needed to cement the idea that these songs that I was kicking around were, first of all, you know, worth packaging together, and that there's a story behind the events that inspired the songs and the lyrics. And so therefore I feel it's important to tell the story, because I kind of think it's everybody's story. I'm a lunch pail kid. We're a blue collar rock band. You know, I'm a single dad. I work a day job. The issues that everyone else are dealing with on a daily basis are the same issues that I'm dealing with. And that's the stuff I write about. So I feel like people need to have music like that, that they can relate to. And that story needs to be told. People need to know you can overcome the shame of your family falling apart. You can overcome losing a job. You can, you know, I mean, you can rise above the things that happen to us that we sometimes think, you know, maybe might be the end of it for us or whatever. So it was really important to put this record out and to make sure that people heard the story.
Yes, sir. What did the making of Somewhere Between Lives teach you about yourself personally and also as a musician? Did you feel like making the record changed you somewhat by the end of the experience in terms of who you were when you started, in contrast to who you were by the time it wrapped up?
Certainly it did. I don't want to say in the beginning that I was arrogant necessarily about, you know, what it would take to do it. That certainly wasn't the case. I think if anything, I was naive, you know. I mean, I knew it was going to be a lot of work, but I think at times I thought, you know, like, okay, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that. And certain things are going to happen in a timeline that makes it, I guess I didn't anticipate how stressful it was going to be being totally indie and self-financed and having to stretch that money over such long periods of time to accomplish all that is necessary in actually doing an official release of an album and a tour It was humbling, I'll say that. By the time it wrapped up, I definitely knew my place in what is a very cutthroat and difficult industry to stay afloat in.
Oh yeah. Very, very difficult industry. What challenged you the most during the recordings of the new EP? Like, how did you overcome the obstacles to get what you needed to get done?
Well, I think originally, I mean, when the idea first happened and I put the music on the internet, like, I thought I might actually take the recording that I had done and clean it up and release that commercially. And then after, you know, doing some soul searching and getting some good, honest opinions from other people, it became evident that we were going to have to finance going into the studio and recording it from scratch all over again in order to do what I really wanted to do. And so that was a little bit of a hurdle, because at the time I was just playing by myself. I had not enlisted any other people. And so therefore I was looking at the timeline like, okay, I'm a single dad. The only time that we can tour for an album if we release it is during the summer. So our window to get this done is very narrow. So how am I going to find other people off the street, teach them this material, go into the studio, record, and then be prepared to go on tour in the summer? It seemed like a very large piece to bite off, but somehow we managed to overcome it. And I guess the how was, I'm a believer myself in God. I know a lot of people in music don't like to say that, or they're not proud of it if they are. I'll be the first to say I love Jesus. I think that he overcame the obstacles for me by giving me the strength to get through every door that he opened for me. And by that I'm standing here doing this. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. The grace of God, man, that can transform a lot of situations. And I can also agree with that statement. Greg, going back to the very, very beginning, when it came to the process of recruiting more players to expand the overall capabilities of 627, what was that like? I know you just touched on a little bit of it, but like, go into like real detail of how that process, like the nervousness, you know, the thoughts you had, the people you approached.
Right. Well, it definitely was a process. It didn't happen right away. Like I said, originally the idea was like, okay, I'm going to record this record myself and I'm going to put it out. I hadn't really thought about, you know, having to tour to support the sales or anything. You know, I don't think my mind was thinking that far down the road at the time. But, you know, when it became evident that I was going to have to play and that recording a record was probably going to be a little bit too difficult for me to, like, go into the studio with a legendary producer like Jack and Dino, who's recorded Nirvana and Soundgarden, I'm not going to go in there with this guy and have to play perfect takes on the drums and then sit down and take out the bass and do perfect tracks on the bass. And then again, the pressure's on me to nail the guitar and then the vocals. Like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this all by myself. I need people. And, you know, like I said, there was a friend of mine standing in the room with me who is actually a producer himself, who's recorded a lot of music. And so I had him over to my house originally with the thought that he was going to help me clean up that recording, but he's also one of the better bass guitar players I've ever heard in my life. And so when the idea popped into my head, like, all right, I'm going to have to play live and I'm going to need some other players, I immediately thought of talking to Mike. I was a little nervous about asking him because, you know, when you're asking for somebody's time to learn to play songs that they didn't write, you know, like, I mean, how big of an ego trip does he think that I'm on, that I'm going to be able to ask somebody with his ability to stand on stage and play a bunch of songs that I wrote? So, yeah, I was a little nervous about asking him. And then, of course, we had to find a drummer, which turned out to be his cousin by marriage, which was an easy leap because he had played in a band with one of my brothers before. So I had a little bit of trust in the idea of playing with Dave. Dave came over, DC, as we call him, played drums with Mike and I, and we literally had a 4-song set within the first 15, 20 minutes of, I mean, it was crusty, but it definitely became evident that core 3-piece was going to work. And then as we started to kind of want to polish it up a little bit, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the nerves kind of set in and I thought I need somebody that is really a polished, you know, touring professional guitar playing musician. I've played, you know, thousands of shows on the drums. My brother Jason and I were in a band called Five Hoss Cartwrights that toured all over the country back in the late 90s. So that I had that experience shared with my brother, only I was playing the drums and he was playing the guitar. So it gives me a huge sense of confidence to look over on the stage and see my brother playing there with me with all of his experience, all of that wisdom. He's my big brother, you know? I mean, he's still kind of my security blanket. And then in the studio, we actually never played with my brother Matt until we actually hit the studio. He drove down from Bellingham just thinking he was going to sing backup vocals. And a month later, we had landed a sponsorship by Nord for a keyboard for Matt to start playing keys and singing backups with us live. So it's actually expanded a little bit even since the recording.
Cool.
But I love playing music with my brothers. They're my best friends. And like I said, they're my security blankets. I have no more trust in anyone than I have in them. So I can't think of a more comfortable place to be.
Yes, sir, definitely. Well, we're going to take a break and get into some more music by 627. But before we do that, we have a question from Facebook and our messenger. Let's see. From Natasha. Hey, Greg. Where did your nicknames come from? Like Ill Funk, MK Ultra, J Danger, The Machine, and DC.
That's an awesome question. Actually, I have had the nickname Ill Funk since I was a little kid because for a white kid, I can spit some flow. So I have been, before anyone knew about Slim Shady, Ill Funk was busting rhymes up here in Washington and no one knew. And
cool.
I actually have a 13 song rap album that I recorded with my brother, my youngest brother, Phil, who is now a surgeon, but he goes by the moniker MCMD, and I was Ill Funk. And my brother Matt, who also sang on that record, did so under the pseudonym The Machine. So that's where my nickname and Matt's nickname came from. Jason has been J Danger. I mean, I think that was even his email address for a while, but he's been J Danger since we were kids. Just kind of a nickname that stuck. DC, the drummer, that's Dave Cook. We call him DC because it's easy and it just fits him. He's a skateboarder. He wears the DC shoes, which is the classic 90s big baggy skate attire. So DC just kind of fits. Mike Knapp, he's MK Ultra. M for Mike, K for Knapp. And MK Ultra is a mind control experiment that is a much maligned conspiracy theory that I just think is funny because I think his bass lines are so catchy that they kind of control your mind.
Oh, wow. That is dope. You know, when I first got this information and I seen the Ill Funk, and Melissa was telling me that it was a progressive rock band, I was already imagining, like, Ill Funk has to be the rapper, and, you know, the band is just...
It does.
I was almost right, man. You were a spitter. Cool.
In fact, if you catch our live set, you might even catch a rap tune snuck in there on occasion. It does happen.
Oh, wow. I'll have to check that out for sure. All right, let's take a break. Here's 627, One Single Night.
This feeling welling up deep inside me. It sticks around from the morning to night. The kind of feeling that I just didn't trust you. The kind of feeling something just isn't right. When you are young, they say wait till you are older. What could you learn if you don't pass any tests? It's hard to breathe with this weight on your shoulders. You can't inhale when it's crushing your chest. We'll
things were simpler then. I'd do it all, my friend. I'd do it all again. I'd take it all right back. Every last attack, every time I crack, I'd take it all right back.
Sounds of 627, Top of the World. Banging track, banging. All right, Greg, we are back from our break. Everyone's got an idea of what makes someone the perfect player to be in their band. So maybe take an opportunity here to spell it out for the people. As plain as day, what is the key to not only becoming a member of 627, but the key to staying one?
That's a very interesting question. I think what was the key to becoming a member of 627 in the first place, I think maybe it was a matter of circumstance or opportunity. Mike was in the right place at the right time, although he has quite the resume. Certainly, it's not that he was undeserving of being a part of it, but he was standing next to me when the thought popped into my head. So perhaps it was destiny. And, of course, everyone else from that point forward was brought on by virtue of either being a family member of Mike's or mine. So that's how that came to be. But in terms of staying a member, I mean, I think the guys will tell you that it takes some degree of patience to deal with me because I'm not a patient person. I go really, really, really fast in my head, and I make a lot of decisions that – are two or three steps down the road. And sometimes I think the key to staying with me is just trying to keep up, like, and understanding that I guess maybe I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just really mission oriented. So, like, I think on tour, I lost my voice by day three, and it had nothing to do with singing every night. It had to do with screaming at everybody to get back in the van. So I think the key to staying a member of 627 is not taking it too personally.
Right. Okay, Greg, let's take it all back to before survival of just living life, because something, someone, some live performance or some record made music super important to you along the way, enough so that it would stick with you for life and make you want to pursue music as an entire career. I don't think that people acknowledge or really realize just how important those moments truly are. But something has to send us towards the insane notion that making music as a living is a great idea, and we all know that by the time we get there. But still, whatever it is that sends us in that direction has to be pretty damn powerful. What would you say the defining moment was for you?
Well, I got to laugh a little bit. The notion of music as a living. I work a day job to pay my bills. Music has yet to have materialized into a monetary sustainable form of eating. But that being said, I knew I wanted to perform from the time I was a little kid. But I think the moment when I realized I wanted to do it and play music and be in a loud rock band was the first time I ever saw a live concert. I snuck out with my brother at 13 and I saw No Means No from Victoria, BC play at the OK Hotel with Sage and My Name. And that was the first time I had ever been in the mosh pit. That was the first time I had ever seen punk rock music live before. And I just, after that moment, I wanted to be on stage driving that kind of fervor from an audience like No Means No did with theirs. And I've always looked up to them from that moment forward. I've aspired to be in that place. I crave it.
Yes, sir, man. Those moments are truly awesome. And we can always talk about obstacles that would have to be overcome in order to make the new EP some other's day. But let's face it, some of the time, it also just snaps directly into place and things can flow so smoothly. Sometimes where we assume there will be stress, maybe there's none, that kind of thing. So tell us about what surprised you about making the new EP. And on the positive side, what were the real highlights of the recording sessions?
Well, I think at first when Jack and Dino, the producer, had agreed to do the record, maybe as we got closer to the date of starting things, he maybe started to question what it was he had gotten himself into. I don't know if I asked too many questions or if it was the way I asked questions or a combination of both, but I got the sense as we got closer to the day that he was kind of hoping maybe I would bag the idea. And so when we finally showed up in the studio, I think I anticipated him having a really negative attitude and being really hard to get on board. And that was exactly the opposite when we showed up in the morning and he realized that we had our stuff together and that we were prepared and that we were ready to go. He immediately flipped a switch, and once he bought in, it was like the most incredible thing in the world, having the genius of somebody who's worked with Nirvana and Soundgarden like that sitting in the studio discussing your riffs with you and the structure of your songs and how to get the most out of the recording, which is exactly why I came to him in the first place. But I think there's something really surreal about watching one of your childhood heroes walk around the studio playing air guitar to one of your solos. I think that was a really flattering moment. And I think that that for me, the real highlight of that whole experience was not only recording with Jack and seeing his buy-in over the process from beginning to end, but the relationship that we built. Like, I still keep in touch with him to this day. I really like him. He's a sweet guy, and he's done a lot of really great things for music, especially in the town where I come from. He's a living legend, and I think people sometimes kind of forget how large of a contribution he has. So for me, a real highlight was getting to work with him, and not only work with him, but have him respect me as a musician, respect me as a fellow producer who records music. You know, he validated that this was something that was worth doing. And that was kind of something I did not necessarily expect from him going in, especially the way I kind of had him pegged in my mind, which was totally wrong.
Definitely. And I know you mentioned you're working a 9-to-5 job like most of us are. And with that said, you know, success is really measured by what makes you happy. So with that, do you allow yourself to feel the success of what you achieved already and let it motivate you to continue forward? With all that you've gone through to get here, how do you feel like you define success these days?
Success for me, where in terms of this project, was literally like I wanted to do it legitimately, release an album that people could find anywhere. I mean, I've released, like I said, back in the 90s, we put out some records, but, you know, I mean, I don't really know. We didn't have a team of people like we have working on this. We didn't, you know, it was just different. I was a kid. We more or less recorded a record and made a bunch of copies of it and gave it out to our friends. But to really do a release where, you know, Dub 7 Records is a label and we put this release out and we're making appearances and we booked a tour around it. Like, I mean, aside from any sort of financial or commercial success, the fact that we're here having this conversation on your show and that this release, you know, it charted on the college radio charts. It broke the top 200. It's been up to 166. Those are significant things to me that I kind of do. Yeah, I let myself enjoy that for a minute. There's something about knowing that I recorded rap tapes when I was 12 years old and put Dub 7 Records on the outside of the cassette tape label. And to see that on the college radio top 200 next to Polyvinyl, Matador, Sub Pop, and Warner Brothers, yeah, that's pretty cool, man.
Wow.
That is pretty cool.
Yes, sir. All right. If you're on the browser right now, make sure you click the description and you can see the website, which is www.dubbed7records.com to view the catalog, the pictures, everything that is 627. I'm looking at it now, and it's a nice site, by the way.
Thank you.
If you're on the browser, just go ahead and take a look. I'll give you 3 seconds. All right, now hit the bookmark button so you can go back and view it because we are in an interview. All right, now that we're back, I never really thought about it until I was doing this interview, but 627, the name itself, you know, the way things are going one day, not all too far from now, you'll actually have to fully explain what 627 actually is. Do you ever think about things like that?
Yeah, I do, actually. I actually get asked this question all the time because people often jump to the conclusion that the name 627 is like my address or something. But originally when I recorded the songs myself, I was doing so to enter a song contest. And the song that I recorded first was a song called Motor Mouth, which was about racing dirt bikes. I raced amateur motocross at the time. And typically when you're an amateur motocross racer, you run a 3-digit racing number, and that number oftentimes is the last 3 digits of your 12-digit AMA card number, which in my case was 627. So I was running the number 627. I entered the song in an online contest. I needed a picture. The song was about racing dirt bikes. I had a picture on my computer of me racing my dirt bike with the number 627 crammed together in the impact font on the front of my number plate. So I just spelled it out, the letters SIXTWOSEBEN, all crammed together, kind of like the numbers are on my racing plate. And that's the name that I entered under the contest. And now, several years later, I've trademarked the name and I'm stuck with it. So that's
cool.
Kind of why, if you look at our logo, our logo is actually kind of a play on the whole NBA, Major League Baseball, AMA, motocross kind of sports logo, except it's me playing the guitar in the red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
And that's where dope. It comes from, is the motocross roots.
Cool deal. And, you know, the world can move so quickly. So the music, how are you going to keep the music of 627 relevant over time?
I think that's the easy part, because the music that we write is blue-collar music. It's everyday life. Like, the things that are happening to me are the same things that are happening to hundreds of thousands of other people around the world. And not everybody knows how to write a song, but everybody knows how to listen to one. And we've all been, you know, pissed off or stressed out or even feeling good in the summertime. I mean, I can think of, you know, you want to talk about, you asked earlier about those defining moments. I remember being a kid and first getting my driver's license and driving around in the summertime when the sun was out with the windows down and Dinosaur Jr. cranked up as loud as my stereo would go. There's just something about listening to Dinosaur Jr. when the sun is out that takes me back to being a kid. So I feel like as long as you're writing music that is about everyday experiences that people relate to, they will always have some sort of connection to an experience or a time when they relied on that to get by. And every time they hear that music, they're going to go back to that feeling of security that you get when you hear a familiar song that makes you feel a way that you like to feel. So as long as I keep writing and about things that we all relate to, and as long as I don't lose my way and I don't forget that all of the successes that come my way are here because they're a gift from God, not because I'm some kind of big shot that out-earned everyone else with my greatness, you know? I mean, just don't lose your way and keep writing about the stuff that's important, and the music will stay relevant and people will gravitate towards it.
That's correct. The new EP, Some Others Day, was set to release in August. Any thoughts to what lies beyond that for 627 or what might be the next move?
Well, for us, we have all very much been of the mindset that this EP was a cost-effective way to say hello to the world. I mean, you know, it's kind of a bit of a social experiment when you try to give your art out to people commercially. So, you know, that being said, studio time's expensive. We're self-financed, so we went with a 4-song EP. But eventually the goal is we've got everybody that's in this band could be the lead singer of their own band in their own right. And each one of them has a catalog of music they've written on a variety of different instruments. There will be no end to the amount of riffs we could record should we be able to manage this in a way that we can finance doing so. So I think that any thought for what lies beyond is just trying to survive long enough to get in the position to do it again and do a full-length record, because, you know, we have a deep catalog of music we need to take a chunk out of, and we can't do it 4 songs at a time. But it was a great way to say hello.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, Greg, you've made it to the end, dude. Thank you so much once again for your time and effort taken to decode my ramblings and share your truths with us all. I love to offer you one last moment here to express anything else, say anything you'd like to, bring up anything that we didn't talk about in the interview itself. The floor is all yours. Welcome to my infamous Vigilantes Radio open floor. So leave us with some final thoughts and make sure to let people know where to find a new EP, Some Others Day.
All right. Well, I would like to say this. I get asked by kids a lot because I'm not a kid anymore. I'm, in fact, in about 3 days, I'm going to turn 39 years old. And a lot of young kids who play music ask, you know, like, how do I get in the position to, you know, I don't have the money to do what you're doing. I don't have somebody to pay for a recording. I don't have somebody to advertise for me. I need to get a label. I need to get a manager. And I kind of say this, like, you know, I'm not shooting anybody's daydreams down, but don't quit your day job. That doesn't mean that music can't be the number one priority. I'm definitely not sticking my toe in the water where this is concerned, but I'm also very realistic, and I understand that it's going to take a long time, and it's going to take a lot of hard work, and it's going to take a lot of money over time, a lot of savings and crimping and, you know, tightening up the belt so that you can afford to do the things like take a group of people on tour or across the country. It's not cheap. That stuff comes from going to work, from doing the ugly thing like getting up every morning at 6 o'clock when the alarm goes off and knowing that I got to go to work and I got to do what my boss asked me to do, not because I'm a slave to the grind, but because this is financing what I really love, which is getting my art out to people. So there's a difference between, you know, being a sucker or a corporate, you know, zombie versus being smart and understanding that the better you put yourself in position financially to be successful, the more likely you will have resources to then use to finance this ultimate goal, which is to play music for a living.
Yes, sir. That is great advice, man. Very good advice. All right. After the music break, we'll be right back to put Greg in our traditional hot seat to either hear some vocals, poems, spoken word, hear some of those rhymes he got, jokes, stories, live instruments. You never know what these creative minds and vessels will produce in the spotlight. So when we come back, we'll find out if he has what it takes to be put on the spot, a test of his true artistry. Here's 627 Reckless Soul.
Actually never been performed anywhere like this before, so this is a bit of an exclusive.
Awesome. I love exclusives.
So here we go.
Comes a time
Okay, that was really nerve-wracking. You weren't kidding when you called it the hot seat.
But you did great, man. That was a great song, man. Oh, we actually have a question from Facebook. Jessica says, Greg, that was beautiful. But my question to you is, what do you do in your free time?
I like to skate. I absolutely love skateboarding, and in fact, I have my DVR as we speak recording the Street League Skateboarding Super Crown Championship on Fox Sports right now. So it was a bit of a sacrifice to sit that out, but thank God for modern convenience. The Lord answered my prayers, and my DVR is recording it right now. So please don't spoil it for me if Nigel Houston has already destroyed everybody. I don't want to know because I'm going to watch it as soon as we're done here. But I love to skateboard. That's probably my favorite thing to do.
Cool deal. All right. Tyson asks, what is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear, wow. Well, I used to be really afraid that people would find out about my real sort of, like, everybody has, like, skeletons in their closet, and I used to be, like, really, really, really scared that people would find out, like, secrets about me as a kid or as a man that would be really embarrassing. But, you know, I went through a divorce, and, like, a lot of stuff happened really publicly, and I kind of overcame that fear, so... This is going to sound really lame, but since I was a little kid, I've always been really scared of spiders. Like, I used to have really bad dreams about spiders. So, yeah, I think I'm not a really big fan of spiders, I got to be honest.
Oh, man, I hate spiders, too. Tracy asks, what has been one of your worst dates ever?
I actually went out on a date with a lady who turned out to be the CEO of an adult film company, I guess.
Oh.
Only I wasn't really picking up what she was putting down until way too late in the date, which I assume was not actually a date, but might actually have been some kind of audition. And she actually said at one point, I don't think you get what's going on here, do you? And then it wasn't too long after that that she asked if it was cool if she took an Uber home instead of getting a ride from me.
Oh, wow.
That was a pretty bad date.
All right. Justin asked, what's your favorite holiday?
My favorite holiday? I like Thanksgiving because it's recently become a tradition with my little family to go and fly to Austin, Texas and spend that time with my brother Jason and his wife and kids. And I've become really close with the band Drive On Mac that my brother plays in Austin, Texas. So making that trip for Thanksgiving, that's kind of our thing. I really look forward to every year as a holiday.
All right. You guys are great for these questions, by the way. Yeah, it is right around the corner. Yeah, you guys are great for these questions, by the way. VogueXX55 asks, who is your celebrity crush?
My celebrity crush is Leticia Buffoni, who is the Women's Street League Skateboarding Champion. If she's ever willing to go out on a date with me, I think I would like to have that opportunity. She is my celebrity crush. She's on my laminated list. So... Any ladies out there who want to be my girlfriend, they got to know that if Leticia Buffoni ever knocks on my door, I'm going to go.
Definitely, definitely. Here's one for Maxwell. This one's for you, Coach Deeney. Give us a tip. Man, why does everybody always want free tips? Look, go over to the website. And you can schedule a free analysis for 15 minutes, and I will talk to you. And then once you want to upgrade, you can do the pay for 30 minutes. But, no, I love giving out tidbits, especially young aspiring artists. I just want to say, Maxwell, focus on your craft first. Put in your time and be great. Write amazing songs and be amazing on stage. Also, give fans a reason to care about you. Help them identify something important about themselves in your brand. Strive to make the audience want to emulate you, both on stage and off stage. You got to be as genuine as possible with your poise and personality. Promote your music both online and offline, and never stop telling people that you exist. Promotion is an ongoing process and not a one-time task. It's just like a job. You go to work, you put in that time. It's 8 hours if you work at a shift that you have to do the necessary tasks to get the day over with. Same thing for your music. You got to spend at least 8 hours promoting, networking, talking about yourself. There's nobody else in the world who can talk better about you than you. And final, Maxwell, make sure you hang out with like-minded people, man. Make sure your support group is actually supporting you and not draining your energy. The support of other bands and artists can also form like powerful alliances. You never know. A band you go see, you know, support, they may come out to see your show. Always give back when something is given to you. Now, Maxwell, that was your free 15 minutes. Now you want to upgrade to the 30 minutes next. So head on over to www. I'm just playing, Maxwell. You're good, man. I hope that is what you were looking for. All right. That brings us to the end. Before the show ended, we are peeking at 1,100 folks on the browser for listening to our show. Man, thank you guys as always for checking out my podcast over here at Vigilantes Radio. All our episodes are available for free download once the show ends, and that includes past shows as well. If you'd like to request music or send something for me to play, just email it to vradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. We are genre-free, we do not judge, and we absolutely do not base our opinions on hearsay, but facts. And actually, scratch that, all my opinions are my own, and I'm always right. You can ask Santa Claus. With that, on behalf of myself, Deeney Mussolini, I appreciate you for tuning in, either afterwards or live with us. Make sure you spread the word. And also, special thanks to Greg from 627 for joining us tonight. Just remember to be yourself and be absolutely great at it. Peace.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.